Welcome to the Daily Wrap Up, a concise show dedicated to bringing you the most relevant independent news as we see it from the last 24 hours. So today, as you've no doubt noticed, is the 4th of July. And the idea of freedom and a declaration of independence from a tyrannical government are, of course, being celebrated. Yet we have our illusions, our preconceived and entirely engineered notions of what freedom actually means today. Except the reality is the term freedom is not really up for debate. It's actually quite clear. It's defined as the absence of necessity, coercion, or constraint in choice or action. Now, despite its clear definition, how it is perceived has seriously changed over the years, which is by no means an accident. Now, as the Future of Freedom Foundation makes very clear, the freedom that Americans celebrated in 1880 was a society in which there was no income taxation, no mandatory charity, no government management or regulation of economic activity, no immigration controls, no systems of public, i.e. government schooling, no Federal Reserve System, no paper money, no punishment for drug offenses, and no Pentagon, CIA, or NSA, no wars in faraway lands, no secret surveillance, no torture, no assassination, and no indefinite detention. As far as we can tell, you know, clearly anything could have been happening before times that we can look back and recognize. History is always written by the winning hand. But for sake of conversation, let's take it as it is. In 1880, this is the way it was. Now, the freedom that Americans today celebrate is one in which there is Social Security, Medicare, education grants, farm subsidies, and other mandatory charity programs. Government management and regulation of economic activity, immigration controls, public government schooling, the Federal Reserve, paper money, punishment for possessing, distributing, or ingesting unapproved substances, a massive military establishment consisting of the Pentagon, the CIA, the NSA, and on, and forever wars, secret surveillance, torture, assassinations, and the indefinite detention of whoever they see fit. Now, some of those things listed are not necessarily good or bad, just simply pointing out that these things are in existence today, whereas at one point, 1880, were not. Two very clearly opposite systems from then to now. And yet people under both systems at that time and today celebrating their freedom. Something is clearly not right with that picture. Now, the Declaration of Independence set forth the ideal that all people have been endowed by nature and the Creator with certain unalienable rights, that is, rights that cannot be taken away or destroyed by anyone, including one's own government. In fact, as the Declaration points out, the purpose of government is to protect the exercise of these rights, not infringe upon, alter, or destroy them in any way, for any reason or justification. Not because it'll keep you more safe, or because this person's in danger, or because this is happening over here. Nothing. There is no justification within the Constitution that allows them to alter, destroy, or infringe upon your rights. But here we are, and they're doing it anyway. Now, most of the Founding Fathers did not before, and certainly did not after, truly embody and live these ideals, which is likely due in part to a lack of desire to do so, meaning some may not have truly believed what they signed. But it's also in part, and I would like to believe it's the larger part, due to the reality that the framers were simply average people within, you know, not to discuss the wealth involved in that, but just people simply striving at the time to achieve a society that reflected the values in the Declaration. Some of them, anyway. Not that they could just sign that piece of paper and, you know, and snap their fingers and the world would all of a sudden be just, right? They had to strive for it. They had to work for it. They outlined what they wanted, envisioned for the future. We did then, and we still do now, need to work toward the creation of this world and then work to maintain it. Now, today, the idea of freedom is muddled, intentionally so, with the idea of safety. We have been conditioned to forget that this country was founded on the essential ideals of limited government, the freedom of choice in every regard, which absolutely comes with a measure of danger, The world is not without its dangers, and no government presence, authoritarian or otherwise, can ever remove that danger from our lives. It can only replace it with one of its own creation, which is entirely the point. Now, the ideas of limited government and freedom of choice should not be misunderstood as the allowance of that which society deems unacceptable or worthy of repercussion or exile. But the point being that such choices were always meant to be society's and not that of an uncontrollable, unaccountable oligarchy, which is what we see today. In a truly free society, that which the founders were arguably aiming to achieve, there will be flaws, faults, and mistakes. But those are ours to make as a community, and not to be overseen or entirely overcome by a faceless ruling entity that has no real understanding of what each specific community holds dear or ultimately values. If said community falls victim to corruption or manipulation, it is the right of the community themselves to remove those doing the manipulating, as is our inherent right, as outlined by the Constitution, and point of fact, even in regard to the federal government itself. The simple realization that such a right has been removed from possibility should show us just how illusory our freedom is in this country today, truly. Now, I only have a couple of stories that I want to touch on today. And consider as I go over these articles, how it is our duty as Americans, or simply a citizen of the earth, to speak truth to power, even when it's uncomfortable, especially when it's uncomfortable. And you can do no better honor to those who fought to give us this freedom, the freedom to do so, than to demonstrate how that freedom is being taken away from us today and others around the world. Now, for the first article of the day, something, and really only a few stories that I'm going to get into today. Honestly, I was just really wanted to come on and give you a message for today and then saw some things that I thought I really had to cover. So, of course, I'm going to include them for you because that's what I'm here to do. Coming from Reuters, where I saw it first, eyes on Iran as Britain seizes oil tanker over serious sanctions. I just love the way that they titled that. I mean, very at face value, there's nothing to suggest this has anything to do with Iran other than the fact that they suggest that it does. Evidence shows that it was coming from somewhere else and on the way to, there had nothing to do with Iran. Going to Syria from Iraq, it could be an Iran surreptitiously trying to send oil, which is their right anyway, and they're only not allowed to because the U.S. says so, which is not really an authority at all. But what we're looking at here is an incredibly illegal act. Wildly illegal, all justified because they say they're doing right. We're stopping the bad guys from doing bad things. And of course, they title it as Eyes on Iran, right? Because we have to make sure that's the first thing you think about. Even though this is just simply putting it on Iran because the U.S. officials and Britain officials involved said so. Now, this morning, British Royal Marines seized an oil tanker in Gibraltar off Spain's southern coast while it was en route to Syria in what's being called an unprecedented and aggressive move to enforce sanctions, which is what it is. Absolutely, there's basically zero legal justification for something like this, especially when you understand that these are sanctions being handed down by countries, not the United Nations, who really, at the end of the day, have no authority or right to tell any other country what they can and can't do with their own allies. You don't just get to say, well, we think you're a bad guy, so we get to just remove your rights. Well, I guess it's the same thing they're doing to Americans today. Well, we think you're in danger, so we're going to take away this right, even though we're not allowed to. And again, as I said in the beginning, the reality is they simply cannot remove those rights. They're inalienable, inherent, God-given. They simply choose not to acknowledge them, which makes them the problem. Now, British Royal Marines seized the oil tanker, accusing it of bringing oil to Syria. Which, again, is not a crime. Now, the tanker was impounded in the British territory at the mouth of the Mediterranean Sea. Now, reports say Gibraltar authorities, Gibraltar is a British overseas territory at the moment, acted on EU sanctions that have been in place for years against Syria. However, one EU sanctions and legal expert told Reuters, quote, "This is the first time that the EU has done something so public and so aggressive. I imagine it was also coordinated in some manner with the U.S., given that NATO member forces have been involved." Now, right off the bat, people are, you know, thinking, okay, well, you know, we can't just assume the U.S. is involved, but it gets much more obvious than that. Spain, which challenges British ownership of Gibraltar, said this morning that the action was prompted by U.S. request to Britain and appeared to have taken place in Spanish waters. Britain's Foreign Office did not respond to a request for comment. And this kind of thing is what's always so frustrating for those of us that are just trying to cover things honestly. And just so happens that we basically everything of real serious note today seems to involve the United States, especially in the very, very bad things that we're looking at. Is that, am I seeking out to find the things the U.S. are doing? No, we're covering the important stories in regard to foreign policy today. And of course, I have a focus on U.S. foreign policy because I'm an American. But the reality is that this story I would have covered regardless of whether the U.S. was involved. And it just so happens to turn out that, look, they were involved. And if I would have insinuated that in the beginning, people, oh, what an anti-American coverage. But turns out they were involved and they requested them to do this, regardless of the fact that they really have no authorization to do so. Now, Reuters suggested it had been loaded with Iranian oil off the coast of Iran, although its documents say the oil was from Iraq. So here we have oil coming from Iraq, as it says in the documents, headed for Syria, which is not a crime. It wouldn't be a crime if it was coming from Iran anyway. But the reality is, even though they say, well, we think it might have come from Iran, we suspect that. So they step in and illegally stop a shipment between two consenting allies. And understand, these are allies of the United States, mind you. That's kind of crazy to recognize, or at least Iraq isn't what we're talking about, that they would step in and essentially stop them from being able to ship their oil just because it benefits Syria and Iran. Now, as critics of the West's sanctions policy on Syria are noting, the European Union has for years allowed advanced weaponry to just flow into the hands of anti-Assad jihadists. But of course, it will act swiftly to block vital oil access to the war-torn and starved population, because that's important. Make sure those weapons get to the terrorists, but the moment you want to bring oil to the people of Iraq, people of Syria, oh, we can't allow that because we want them to starve so they revolt in their government. Get with the program. I mean, this is on and on and on. It's so obvious how this continues to happen in all the countries they're involved in. And this is just the West in general. The United States, UK, France, Germany, all they're all involved in a large degree to all of these things, especially when we're talking about places like Yemen. I mean, it's overt how illegal their actions are and how willing they are to take them, regardless of how disconnected they are from international norms, from human rights, from any kind of anything resembling law or even morals for that matter. As Kevork Almasian from Syriana Analysis said, rightly so, while ISIS was stealing the Syrian oil and selling it to Turkey, the so-called U.S.-led coalition, UK included, against ISIS wasn't interested in stopping the theft of Syria's oil. But today, the UK stopped an oil tanker delivering energy to the Syrian people. Now, let's not get this misunderstood. This is what was happening. Regardless of where it came from or who it was benefiting, this was destined for the people. I mean, we're talking about the people right now in Syria who are suffering the worst economic downturn they have even since the entire U.S. invasion. Right now, it's the worst it's ever been for them, and they're stopping their energy from getting to them. This is not, we're talking about all kinds of energy, not just for cars. We have to recognize how much this affects what they're doing and how much they operate, how much they need this to successfully do all kinds of things for just to be able to maintain their daily lives. Think about yourself in this comfortable place in the United States. All the things that we just take for granted. With the snap of their fingers or the pirating of a ship, they can take away these things from these people who have nothing to do with what's going on. That is sinister and malicious. Just to achieve a political and economic goal. Hurting people, knowingly hurting these people. And recognize, like he's saying, that they're more than willing to allow the terrorist organization they claim to fight to just go ahead and sell the oil. And then somehow manage to let that gold reach back to the United States, the gold they made from the sale of the oil. Yeah, but we don't talk about that. A nice little circle of profit for everybody, including the terrorists and the U.S. government and Saudis and Israelis and all of them. We're all profiting wildly while pretending to fight everything. They allow that, but here we go with energy. Nope, can't allow it. Not for the people. Now, the ship has been identified as the Grace One, a Panamanian flags tanker. So coming from, arguably from Iraq, with a Panama flag going for Syria, and because they smell it might be including Iran somehow, gotta take it down. Does that sound legal to you? No, it sounds like piracy. Now, it's a Panamanian flag tanker managed by the Singapore-based iShips Management PTE Limited, which had apparently taken the unusual step of sailing all the way around the tip of Africa instead of the Suez Canal from the Iraqi port of Basra, which to me does suggest that they're aware that they're going there's people that are likely going to try to stop them, let's say. Which doesn't necessarily mean what they're doing is wrong. It means that the people in power have made it illegal, at least as far as they're concerned. Not internationally, mind you. But what you can see here is the red pin is where the documents say it came from Iraq, from Basra. So they say, and the point is that most times they would have sailed around through out of the strait, out of the Strait of Hormuz right here, along and around and up into the Suez Canal access where the purple pin is right here. And this is an interesting discussion in regard to the idea that the U.S. backed forces and have been arguably trying to control everything around the Suez Canal in order to cut off control another choke point for oil. Seemingly unrelated, but it's interesting to think about. But so the point is, what they're saying is that instead of going this obvious route, they came through the canal, went all the way down around Africa, all the way down here and all the way around. That's crazy to think about how much extra fuel and time that takes. And so ask yourself why they would do that, recognizing that there are hostile forces that are trying to stop them from simply being able to ship oil to people who need it. Civilians, not governments, but civilians. That's kind of crazy to think about. But so the argument is that, yes, they sailed all the way around Africa, suggesting likely that they were trying to avoid getting caught. Now, European officials believe it was on its way to the Syrian port of Banyas in its refinery. Now, again, this is right here where we're talking about. I had it tabbed on here somewhere. I guess I lost it. Well, anyway, we're talking about generally over here in Syria is where they're trying to bring this oil to. Now it says, quote, that refinery is the property of an entity that is subject to European Union sanctions against Syria. That's according to the Gibraltar chief minister, Fabian Picardo. Now, right off the bat, you should recognize here that they believe the ship was on its way to a Syrian port. Hadn't gotten there yet. So I guess we just have to take their word for it in this kind of weird sort of pre-crime situation, right? Where they know that they're about to do something which is actually not even illegal, but they don't want them to do it. So we're going to illegally pirate this ship because they are about to do something that they haven't even done yet, that even if they did, wouldn't be illegal. These situations, every time I discuss these situations, it's like it's mental gymnastics. But they believe it was on the way to Syria. What other situation in the world can a government do something like this and say, well, you know, we thought this was going to happen. And I know it's not illegal, but we told them they weren't allowed to. So all across the board, we're breaking every possible rule and just saying, we're going to take that oil. And it's possible they even just made this entire thing up because this was the design from the beginning. But you have to recognize how entirely fraudulent this entire thing is. They believe it was going to Syria. It probably even was. That's also not a crime. Now, a previous CNBC report noted that, quote, tanker tracking firms believe Iran is once again shipping crude oil to Syria, resuming the illicit trade as tensions with Washington rise and the Islamic Republic faces increasing international isolation, which is so incredibly funny. This is them saying, please believe what we just said. Let me just repeat that. Please just take our word for it. Right? They're the ones doing bad things and Washington's fighting them and Iran's being isolated. None of that's true. None of that is true. First of all, they believe that they're shipping oil again, which has already been verified because they're not. Iran is very clear. There's no reason they should not be shipping oil to people that want to buy their oil legally. But resuming the illicit trade, make sure you know it's wrong what they're doing. It's not. That's just CNBC regurgitating what the government tells them to say. And then goes on to say that they're the ones being isolated. When how ridiculous is that? We can recognize very clearly that everybody else is still in the nuclear deal. That everybody else is still arguing that we back away from the situation. And everything the U.S. is doing is aggressively and increasingly isolating them from the rest of the world. But here is CNBC telling you the exact opposite. Good job, CNBC. Way to be on point. I mean, it's just so, it's so humorous how obvious it is that they're just simply going, yes, government. Oh, okay. Illicit trade. And they're isolating, right? They're just waiting for the talking points to regurgitate to you what they're saying. It's so easy to see otherwise. That's why they're failing today. People like us are succeeding because they're that ridiculous. Now, again, the EU, it's important to understand this. And the EU has for years, allowed weapons shipments to so-called rebels seeking to overthrow President Bashar al-Assad. They've allowed it to happen, knowing it's happening. Clearly because, as I would argue, they're involved in it. Go figure, as that's also been very clearly shown. But the point is, didn't even bat an eye about allowing illegal weapons to flow into terrorists, but at the same time starving the civilian population of fuel, right? Because that's important. Now, today, Vanessa Bealey shared what former UK ambassador to Syria, Peter Ford, had to say about this incident. And I found this very, very interesting. Now, basically, I'm just going to read you what he said here because it's very powerful. Someone that's involved. It's like yesterday watching Colonel Wilkerson say exactly what we've all been saying. Someone who was deeply involved with these people and had before chose to speak the truth was held in high regard. And he still is. But in regard to the mainstream circles, they just pretend he doesn't exist anymore because he says the truth. But here we have Peter Ford talking about the UK seizure of the oil tanker. And he says, quote, technically, the measure will find UK Foreign Office lawyers to defend it. But other lawyers were deemed the action illegal, basically saying they'll find someone to defend anything. But other lawyers will definitely deem it an illegal act. Because actually it is, very clearly. I'm adding that. He goes on to say, while sending oil to Syria may be illegal under U.S. law, it is not illegal under EU law. Which is very interesting. Because understand, it's not even illegal to send oil to Syria under EU law. What they're arguing is that the sanctions violated because of the port they were going to. And understand that the U.S. are the ones that reached out and said, hey, make this happen. This is so obviously orchestrated, and they are bending the word of the law to fit how they want it to work. Peter Ford's telling you right now, he said it's not illegal under EU law to do what they're doing, and yet the EU, Britain, stepped in and still did what they did because the U.S. told them to, or asked them to, however you want to look at it. Now, he goes on to say, the far-fetched justification seems to be that the Banias oil refinery in Syria provides financial benefit to the Syrian government and is therefore subject to EU sanctions. And thus, any contact with it, whatever, is sanctionable. Except that remember that they didn't even get there yet before they tucked the ship down. Oops, that kind of screws that up for you, EU, but they're going to do it anyway. They don't care. It goes on to say, an Iranian lawyer would point out that if the EU had intended its restrictions to prevent oil shipments to Syria, it could easily have adopted a relevant regulation. But it didn't. Very revealing, very interesting. He goes on to say, for 5 years until now, since Banias was sanctioned, tankers have been making their way past Gibraltar, heading for Banias and the UK, and the UK has not seen fit to intervene. For 5 years, the same thing has been happening, and they haven't done anything. So why now? Well, obviously we know why. Because the U.S. reached out and said, hey, step in. This is what I'm looking at. This is my opinion. But 5 years, they allow it to happen. And the moment that the U.S., as according to Spain, calls them and says, do something, they snap to and they do something about it. So why now is a good question. Why now, United States? Why now? Now, this is obviously Hunt trying to look macho, he says. The UK currying favor with Trump to get a better trade deal. This will increase tension with Iran, of course. At precisely the wrong moment, when even the US, by its own admission, is looking for a workaround for Iranian oil shipments to China. How do we think Iran is more likely to react? By meekly no-toeing or doubling down in some way? Ordinary Syrians are suffering greatly because of the impact of U.S. oil sanctions. Hospitals don't have fuel to power their generators. Car drivers have to queue up for about 12 hours to get gas. Think about that. Think about waiting in line for 12 hours just to get gas for your car so you can do what you need to do to survive. He goes on to say, we should be proud of ourselves. Hunt on the Today BBC radio program this morning refused to say if he considered fox hunting cruel. Bravo, macho man, putting the boot into prostrate Syria as well. He goes on to say, Spain may not be best pleased at the reminder of UK colonial arrogance. Very interesting thinking about he's referencing Gibraltar there as being occupied by by Britain. And Spain's clearly not very happy about it. And they've clearly reached out and said, yeah, U.S. told them to do it. Basically told on them. Now, since the war in Syria started, the pattern, the sickening pattern, has been basically this. Western and Gulf weapons pour into Syria's proxy war, refugees flee the resulting chaos, sanctions strangle the common people further, and refugees who ultimately return then face the West's renewed slow economic strangulation of the war-torn country. What do people out there that are arguing that these guys are the problem, what do they suggest they do in this situation, where at every possible turn, they're being shut down and sanctioned and hit and turned away? When the United States foreign policy is what is causing the situation, by and large. Think about what he's, I mean, think about that. The refugees who basically work past all of what's happening because of this. All of the sanctions and the war and the chaos and the U.S.-backed terrorists. But then when they return, they then face the economic strangulation that the U.S. maintains, like in Syria, like in Venezuela, like all the places that they're continuing to do past the obvious failure of their agenda. That's just simply malicious. And then people attack these people fleeing U.S.-created chaos as the problem. Just like we're seeing out of Libya, again. Except that the mainstream media, by and large, won't touch it. Because they have clearly been told, at least for now, that it's off limits. Now, you're going to see this story. But the idea of the story and why it's happening is what I'm talking about. The mainstream media had no problem ignoring the absolute chaos and slave trade that was created because of U.S.-NATO intervention in Libya. They were happy to ignore it for years. Oh, sure, they care about human life, but not when it conflicts with their agenda, right? And now, because all of a sudden we have U.S. involvement again, it's important for us to recognize that it's never gone away. It's always been a failed state. It's always been chaos. That's what it looks like after U.S. liberation. But they didn't care at all. But now that we're seeing refugee boats trying to flee the chaos of General Haftar, backed by Donald Trump, over the phone and obvious for everyone to see, who is killing migrants and bombing locations, these people are fleeing the chaos and died on the way. This is what we're talking about here. They can't seem to stop talking about migrants coming from South America today, which are also fleeing destructive U.S. foreign policy. So why then would they seemingly ignore stories like this? They were fleeing U.S.-supported war and died in the process. These people are not the enemy. They are not the problem. But for those who see them that way, what do you suggest they do? Go back to their war-torn country that's being funded and armed by the West? The terrorist-run and destabilized nation that is only like that because of UN-NATO liberation? I mean, really? I mean, what are we actually arguing here? We have to recognize what the real problem is, what the catalyst behind all of it is. The problems are the nations causing this chaos and pretending that it's all for the greater good. And of course, to make this all the more insulting, this coming from anti-war, U.S. blocks UN Security Council from condemning Libyan Migrant Center airstrike, the one we just covered, where General Haftar, it would appear, is guilty for bombing, it looks between 44 and 53, depending on who you look at, innocent civilians, migrants, the same people that just died in the ship trying to flee the terror that's being backed by the U.S., the U.K., France, and all of them. Now, the United Nations Security Council just failed to condemn, which I think is so ridiculous that we can't just condemn this thing. We have to tally up votes and allow people like Israel and the United States to just stop these things from happening. But they failed to condemn an airstrike on Libya's capital city of Tripoli that killed at least 53 civilians. We just talked about this on Tuesday when it hit a migrant detention center. Now, the DW reported that not only did the U.S. block a condemnation, but the U.S. actually prevented the 15-member Security Council from issuing a statement about it. So no, we're not allowed to condemn the obvious war crime. Regardless of who's responsible, right? They just don't want you to condemn the fact that it happened. which should show you what's really going on here. Why in the hell would they not condemn a migrant sender with 44 to 53 people that got murdered, regardless of who's responsible? Maybe because who's responsible is someone tied to them. Maybe, and maybe that's why they blocked them from issuing a statement about it. Can't tell anybody that we didn't allow condemnation. I mean, how flagrant is this? This is as bad as the United States not allowing Iran to present its evidence at the UN. This is obstruction, if that even applies. They are absolutely stopping them, in the case of Iran, in this case stopping the UN, from being able to actually do what their body is meant to do, which shows you the broken nature of what they are today. Now, the Security Council condemnation of the attack would have also, guess what, called for a ceasefire in Tripoli if it had passed. Again, wonder why they didn't want that to pass, seeing as how they're right now backing General Haftar, who's in control of all of the oil resources and is inching towards Tripoli to take control of the country. I wonder why they wouldn't want to condemn these actions, seeing as how they've thrown in with his side. It's just that obvious. Now, the UN-backed government of Tripoli blamed General Haftar for the airstrike, who's been carrying out months-long bombardments on the capital, right where we're talking about. Of course, Haftar denied responsibility for the attack, didn't give any other information, just said, no, they did it. Although he did claim responsibility for an airstrike on a nearby facility. So yeah, we didn't hit that one, but we just bombed that one. But as I said yesterday, why would a UN-backed government bomb itself? Because this is what we're talking about. It's certainly possible. I'm not saying it's not possible. I'm saying think about what makes the most sense and why the UN-backed government would bomb the location in which they're in. It does not make sense. And why then think about would the U.S. both block any official condemnation and statements of it? Likely because Trump just backed Haftar. And is that moral? Is that legal? Is that correct? Obviously not. That is choosing profit, control, and political agendas over human life, over what's legal, over what's moral, in every possible way that is wrong. But here we are. In every single case we're talking about, this is not just the United States. But when you dig into these situations, guess what? It's pretty common that they happen to be involved today. Now, we should care about this for many, many reasons. And for the many out there who regularly respond to coverage such as this by saying, why do we care about Libya? Why do we even care about Iran? The two most obvious reasons are, one, that you should care about human life if you are a human with empathy. And two, you should care because it's our government taking part in this, doing so in our name with our tax dollars if you're an American. So regardless, we should care because people are suffering. And if you're a living, breathing human being, you should probably care about that. But in addition to that, they're doing so in our name with our money. So we should care what's happening. And also recognizing the blowback that has always come because of these U.S. foreign actions, as Ron Paul has made very clear. Now, the reality is right there in front of us today. And there are still many who just refuse to see it because they have been convinced that it's wrong of them to point out the faults of the government, when in fact, it is our very duty to do so. I love this country. Despite what the jingoistic sycophants out there might say, and everything I do today is in service of the United States as well as the rest of the world. But you see, when I say the United States, many immediately think government, which would make the Founding Fathers cringe. They are two very, very different things. And many powerful people have worked very hard to make you forget that. I fight for the people of the United States and the people of the world, not the governments those people allow to be in power. So again, I love this country. As hopefully you can now see, is not the same thing as saying, I love this government. Unquestioningly supporting the actions of government, of your government, is not patriotic. That is subservience. And saying so does not dishonor all the men and women who were deceived by the state, as many of them truly believe their actions to be in the service of good, even though more than you might believe have come home with quite a different perspective. Patriotism is being critical of your government with every decision they make, regardless of one's political affiliation. That was what this country was founded on, and that which has been stolen from us with years of subtle and not so subtle conditioning. Our duty is to our fellow Americans as an American. And you can apply that to whatever country you're from in the same way. Not the government officials who are supposed to be put in place by us. Yet that too has been stolen from us. Now, to say it's un-American to question your government is to say we are here to serve it and not the other way around. And I know without a doubt that is how they see us. But certainly, that cannot be the way you see it, especially on a day that celebrates your independence. Yet this is what we are told, as today's uber-Americans shout us down for questioning foreign wars and domestic policy alike. We must shake free from this statist mentality that turns us on ourselves. I mean, consider for a moment, what if people sickened by tyrannical control threw off the shackles of bloated governance in favor of leading themselves? What if the erosion of fundamental freedoms, guaranteed not by a document, but by being human, were actually intolerable? What if even the revolutionary roots, the foundation of the nation, were soaked in the blood of countless individuals and peoples? A likely sign no tangible freedom would last beyond lip service. What if freedom were little more than a propagandic bait and switch to distract from the systematic dwindling of essential human rights, both domestically and around the planet? What if those human rights encompassed living freely, as well as the right to live? What if the slogan "freedom isn't free" meant nothing? What if a military occupation crept into effect and its brutes robbed a startling number of innocent people of life in near perfect impunity? And sizable segments of the population justified this as, you know, just part of the job description. What if remotely controlled and highly inaccurate drones bombed non-combatants and their families with abandon, but the Empire deemed the deaths justifiable, and then severely undercut estimates of how many people have perished that way? What if the government acted only on behalf of corporations and banks, and amassed a military through cunning recruiting tactics to lay waste to anyone opposing that action? What if those institutions owned and operated nearly all media to disguise such pro-military propaganda as protecting already non-existent freedoms? What if that manipulation was so successful it divided the population against one another to distract from the actual motives and ridicule those who didn't buy the farce? What if people were so desensitized to violence and spilt blood that acting as mercenaries for the state appeared honorable? What if politics, on top of all of that, were the bread and circuses of modern times? What if government limited political choice to two corrupt parties, allowed an unlimited influx of corporate money to drastically influence the outcome of elections? What if the people accepting of violence became aggressive with each other in fights over which tyrannical ruler would next reign? What if the entire system, elections, protections, legalizations, militarization, all of it, were rigged beyond the people's ability to reform it? Would that be sufficient justification for celebrating a day named for the ghost of independence? Or would that be indisputable just cause for outright revolt? Now, I am in no way advocating any kind of violence. As anyone watching this show knows, I'm in no way advocating for some hyped up civil war that only further divides the people. I do, however, seek a revolution, but one of a different kind. Nothing founded on violence has ever had its roots in a just society. Many certainly tried with this country, but as I have pointed out many times, there were men in that very room as the Declaration of Independence was signed, who had designs to create exactly the type of overreaching, all-controlling federal government that we see today. So I propose we seek to begin with something different, something enlightened, a true revolution of the mind. As I've said many times in the past, violence and danger will be ever present. That is inevitable. No government presence, authoritarian or otherwise, can ever remove that danger from our lives. It can only replace it with one of its own creation. But as Gandhi said, if we could change ourselves, the tendencies in the world would also change. And I truly believe that. So take that into the world today. and change it.
Now, I know that standards have slipped over the last few years in Washington, but for a lawyer, you're remarkably cavalier with any idea of justice.